Before we begin, I'd like to thank those families who have graciously sponsored tonight's cheer. First to Stephen and Tammy Wagner and family, in honor of the DRS, Menahalim, Rabbeim, Mechanchim, and Talmidim. The Pasternak family, in loving memory of their father and grandfather, Chazen Zachariah Moshe Eli, Ben Yitzchak Schwartzberg, Olav HaShalom. To Tessie and Michael Weiss as well, in honor of the birth of their granddaughter, of course, Rav Rosenzweig's granddaughter as well, Miriam Yocheved Weiss, and also the Shainman family, Zecher Nishmas, their father and grandfather, Yisrael Isser Ben Sion Ben Yaakov. In the merit of the learning that we do, those neshamos that are being sponsored, Shavon Aliyah, and the families who celebrated, who sponsored, should always have simcha and bracha in their family forever. I once heard a beautiful piece of Torah from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Shlita. He pointed out that the Gemara in Tanis compares Torah to a variety of liquids. The Gemara, on the one hand, compares Torah to water and milk. Ein mayim el Torah, nofes titofna, sifsosayach kala, devash v'chalav tachas tashameich. And in that very same pasuk and elsewhere, the Torah also is compared to wine and honey. And Rav Aaron explains so beautifully, to make a very long story short, he explains so beautifully that Torah to the Jewish people actually means two distinct things. On the one hand, Torah is a luxury good. It's something so special when someone hears a brilliant insight, a deep analysis, a penetrating chiddush, an original idea. So the Torah at that time is to a person like honey or like wine. Fine, special, sweet-tasting luxury good. However, there's another dimension of Torah, and that is the Torah as water and the Torah as milk. Water is the most basic liquid necessary for human survival. Milk is that which a baby is weaned on, what he grows on, what sustains a young child. And Torah for a Jew is actually both things. On the one hand, it's what gives us our inspiration, it's our high moments, it's our excitement in life. On the other hand, Torah is also a bare subsistence good. Something that we should relate to in a way that we can't go a day without it. It's a basic fundamental building block of our spiritual existence. When I think of our presenter tonight, our Magid Shir, the Rosh Yeshiva Rav Rosenzweig, whom we have the privilege of hearing tonight, I think of the fact that probably for most people here know the Rebbe as one of the Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University, someone whose shiurim and insights, Divrei Torah, are known for their brilliance, for their clarity, for their originality, and really symbolize this idea of the Torah that is wine and honey. However, those who know Rav Rosenzweig a little bit more personally, and who know of the way he conducts himself, the way he interacts with people who don't necessarily share his level of brilliance and originality and his koach in learning, know that he understands very, very clearly both dimensions of Talmud Torah, both in terms of his own personal simple humility as well as in his ability to communicate even the most difficult esoteric ideas in a clear, straightforward, understandable fashion, so that so many can partake of his Divrei Torah. It is truthfully, we were saying before this, I think, believe this is the first time we ever had the schus of having a Rosh Hashanah in our Beis Medrash. I guess it took one of our alumni to marry into the family to make that happen. But we're so honored and privileged that the Rebbe came to give a shiur to us tonight. Rav Rosenzweig will be speaking about the relationship between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Please give your undivided attention to Rav Michal Rosenzweig.
Osin Bechvod Achsanya, firstly, thank you for the extremely warm introduction, very complimentary. I appreciate it very much. As you indicated, I think it's the first time that I've been in the Beis Medrash here, but for me, being here is particularly meaningful on many levels. First of all, I've enjoyed the fruits of this yeshiva for many, many years, having many wonderful talmidim from the yeshiva here, and in the past, and I continue in the present, and hopefully in the future, really some of the most unusual, dedicated and committed Talmidei Chachamim that have grown in our Beis Medrash, have been nurtured here and have their roots here in this community, and particularly in this Beis Medrash. So for me to be here, there's a certain element of Hakaras HaTov. On a more personal level, as you indicated, my son-in-law, who's also Talmud, and is very special in all ways, is very much a part of this institution, identifies very strongly with it, gained a great deal from being here, and so there's a family aspect to that as well. Just listening to the people who were mentioned as sponsors of the Shiurim, I think all the families were familiar to me, and that too again makes it something particularly special, and including the idea that our shared granddaughter is part of the shiur tonight as well. The topic that I picked, the relationship between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, is a critical theme in Yadus and Halacha generally. As we'll try to explain, we don't have so much time, but in the time that we do have, a little bit at least, one of the unique facets of the Halachic system, of the worldview of Yadus, I think is precisely in this interaction between these two motifs, as we'll try to explain a little bit about them this evening, Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaal Peh, the written Torah, the text of the Torah, the exact language which is given to us through Moshe Rabbeinu, literally from Mipi HaGvura, from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, on the one hand, and of course the painstakingly transmitted Mesorah, handed down meticulously with care from generation to generation, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, till our own time, that chain of the Mesorah, which is a uniquely Jewish concept. So generally speaking, this is an important theme in Halacha to understand the uniqueness of Judaism and the special worldview of Halacha. It's critical to understand this interaction and this relationship, and I say we'll touch on some aspects of it this evening. But I think it's particularly exemplified also and meaningful in context of the period in which we find ourselves right now. The series of special shiurim that are being given here, which is, I think, a very fine idea, in the framework of Sfiras HaOmer, from the celebration of Chag HaMatzos until Shavuos, I think provide a unique opportunity to concentrate on this particular topic. Let me highlight it in a very simple way. I know I have a chumash here somewhere. When we look in Parshas Emor and we analyze the various moedim, the Torah delineates each and every moed in the Parsha. It provides us with an opportunity, if we read the Torah Shebichtav part very carefully, under a magnifying glass in some cases. In this particular case, we don't even need a magnifying glass. But if we take very, very seriously our reading of the Psukim and our study of the Psukim, so it provides an opportunity to analyze the interrelationship between various of the Chagim, and to see whether or not they're parallel, albeit with the differences that demarcate them and that set them as unique, or whether or not the differences are more fundamental. There's Chag HaSukkos, there's Chag HaMatzos. Each one is at least a seven-day holiday. If we analyze these psukim, and of course the Torah Shebaal Peh that accompanies it, right, it provides us with great insight to the interrelationship between those seemingly parallel holidays. They are parallel. The Gemara itself, the Torah Shebaal Peh, again, zeroes in on Tesvav, Tesvav. Both of them have, come out on the same day of the month. They have many similarities. If we compare them and then contrast them, we walk away with important insights in Avodas Hashem and in the celebration of those Yomim Tovim. And that's true with regard to the other Chagim as well. If you compare Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur and Parshas Emor, we can walk away with important insights. So as we're on the cusp of the holiday of Shavuos, so it behooves us to look at the way the Torah Shebichsav, the way the divine text speaks about this holiday, and to try to glean whether there's anything singular about it, unique about it, anything about it which will help us to appreciate what it is that we're about to celebrate and how we should be celebrating it. So if you look at the psukim, I'd say in this case you don't really need a magnifying glass. There are two things that immediately jump out at you. If you look at the other moadim, each of the moadim is defined by a very specific calendar date. We know when Rosh Hashanah is, we know when Yom Kippur is, we know when Pesach is, we know when Sukkot is. We're told what number of month it is, what day in the month. All of that is provided with great clarity in the psukim themselves in Parshas Emor, right? Elamod Hashem Mikroi Kodesh Asher Tikro Sam Demo Adam B'Chodesh HaRishon Barbasa L'Chodesh Bein Arbayim Pesach Hashem in the first month on the 14th day, on the 15th day B'Chamisha Aser M'Chodesh Hazeh Chag HaMatzos Hashem, and so on. And that is true all along. If you look at Rosh Hashanah, it's on the first day of Tishrei. Yom Kippur is on the 10th day of Tishrei. We know all the dates. One of the reasons we know the dates and they come so trippingly off our tongue is because they're explicit in the Torah Shebichsav, in the Psukim, in Parshas Emor, which we read when we get to the Vayikra parts of Kriyas HaTorah, and often we read them as well on the Moadim themselves. The exception, of course, is Chag HaShavuos. When it comes to Chag HaShavuos, in the aftermath of Pesach, the next holiday is Chag HaShavuos, and here, instead of telling us what month, what day, the Torah tells us something completely different. Vayidabar Hashem el Moshe le'emor, daber al bnei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem, ki savoro la'aretz asher ani nosein lachem, u'ktartem es kitzirah, ve'veisem es omer reishis kitzirchem al hakohen. We're told about the korban ha'omer, which is brought on the second day of Chag HaMatzos. Then we're told that one should be counting, u'svartem lachem, mi machoras ha'shabos, from the night after Shabbos, right? Miyom aviyachem es omra tnufa sheva shabbosos tenimos tiyena, 7 weeks, ad mimacharos ha-shabbos ha-shviyis, till the aftermath of the, right, the night after Shabbos, on the 7th, tisbru chamishim yom, should count 50 days, v'ikravtem mincha chadash al Hashem, and so on. And then finally we're told about this day, that it's an important day, and consequently, you shouldn't do malacha, it's a holiday, etc. So of course what's striking is there is no calendar date. Not only is there no calendar date, but the Torah uses mimacharas ha-shabbos, two mimacharas ha-shabboses, a double mimacharas ha-shabbos, if you will, to signify, to provide clues for this day. We also know that there's a major debate between the tzedukim, the Sadducees, and the Perushim, the Chachamim, as to how to interpret mimacharas ha-shabbos, this phrase. Does it mean like it usually means? This is the claim of the tzedukim, who are literalists, right? They were more than literalists, but let's use that term for the moment. So they said mimacharas ha-shabbos means, to translate it colloquially, Saturday night. So one Saturday night to another Saturday night, and that's what it is. You always start counting the Omer on a Saturday night. That's the view of the tzedukim. The Perushim said that mimacharas ha-shabbos refers to Yom Tov. It's the second night, the night after the first night of Yom Tov. Chazal say sometimes Shabbos Ikri Yom Tov, sometimes Yom Tov Ikri Shabbos. That in itself is a fascinating idea. In fact, the whole Parshas Emor really begins, Torah says, I'm about to explain to you the Moadim, Ela Moadei Hashem. And before we get to the first of the Moadim, which is Chag HaMatzos in this Parsha, actually the Torah speaks about Shabbos. So, according to Chazal, this is part of the story. This is the other side of it. We're speaking about Yom Tov, but we end up speaking about Shabbos. Then when the Torah says, Mimachras HaShabbos, right in the context of the period between Pesach and Shavuos, the 50 days, it switches, it flips it. In other words, Shabbos is Yom Tov in the beginning of the Parsha, and Shabbos, I'm sorry, Yom Tov is Shabbos in the beginning of the Parsha, and Shabbos is Yom Tov in the towards the end of the Parsha. Shabbos Ikri Yom Tov, Yom Tov Ikri Shabbos. The Tzedukim, their claim was, why look for complications? The Torah says, Mimachas HaShabbos, we should take it at its word. The Purushim, the Chachamim, had a Masorah that Mimachas HaShabbos means the night after Yom Tov. So what's fascinating is, number one, we don't have a calendar date, and number two, what we do have is ambiguity, which requires Masorah, right, to clarify what that date even is. Right. Very, very peculiar, very strange. In fact, there's a whole discussion in the Gemara Masechet Shabbos what the proper day of Matan, what really was the day of Matan Torah, and what is the appropriate day possibly for Chag HaShavuos. Is it Vav? Is it Zion Sivan? What exactly is the right day? It's unheard of in any other holiday that you could have a debate about either a major event that took place, certainly a major event that is commemorated as a holiday. But because the Torah is silent about the calendar date and uses these kind of camouflage terminology, right, which requires a Masorah to decode it, you know, when it comes to Chag HaShavuos, so the exact calendar date is something that can be discussed, and that's a topic in its own right. So that's the first very striking difference when we analyze Shavuos and we compare it to the other Chagim. The second, of course, is that the emphasis in the Torah is on this count, and the poles are the Hakravas Korban HaOmer, the bringing of the Korban HaOmer on one side, and the Korban of Shtei Alechem, which is a unique Korban, on the other side. Right, the second day of Yom Tov, of Chag HaMatzos, we bring the Korban HaOmer. That's when Mimachros HaShabbos we begin this count, and we reach day number 50 after counting 49 days of Svira. That 50th day is Chag HaShavuos, and that's the day that we bring the Korban Shtei HaLechem. However, all of us who daven and bench know that the way that we celebrate Chag HaShavuos is Zman Matan Torasein. But it's fascinating, once again, a glaring omission. While the Torah tells us what Chag HaMatzos is all about, right? It's about the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's connected to certain dinim that we know of, matzah and chametz and korban pesach, and a whole story. We know what Rosh Hashanah is about. It's a little bit ambiguous, but that's not for now. But zichron trua, at least. We know what Yom Kippur is about, right? V'nisim esnaf shoseichem. Right, Kiba Yamaze, Yachaper Alechem, Tahar Eschem, Mikochat Osechem, Lifne Hashem Titaru. Right, we know what Chag HaSukkos is about. Right, Kiba Sukkos Hoshafti, Ispnei Yisrael, Beotzio Osam, Me'erf Mitzrayim. All this only in this same Parsha and Parshas Emor. The only Chag which is seemingly, let's say, shrouded in mystery is, doesn't do it justice, where the Torah seems to again have intentionally obscured what the Torah Shabbat Peh, what the Masorah says is the real reason for the commemoration and celebration, is Shavuos. So while every other Chag has a calendar date, and every other Chag also has an accurate, let's say, label or designation or description as to what it is that we do on that holiday, when it comes to Chag HaShavuos, right, we have all sorts of ambiguities, mysteries, and for our purposes tonight, and any purposes, any night actually, I think objectively, it could be said, an incredible level of reliance, an intense level of reliance on the Masorah to decode the psukim relating to this holiday and the essence of the holiday itself. And of course, the question is, why should that be so? There's another bit of a puzzle, mentioned very quickly, and that is based on not the psukim so much, but the halacha's understanding, both of korban shnei alechem, which is the unique symbol of Chag HaShavuos. It's not just a korban that you bring on Shavuos, otherwise it would have been dealt with in Parshas Pinchas. It's a part of the Kedushas Hayom, part of the sanctity and the uniqueness of the day of Shavuos, the korban shnei alechem. The halacha brings this point out, as we'll explain. And it's something that the Gemara speaks about as a general approach to Chag HaShavuos. So it's a little bit late, so I won't read it inside, but the Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Samech Hesem Beis, records a famous debate between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. How is one supposed to spend one's Yom Tov? What do you do on a Yom Tov, generally, on a Shabbos, on a Yom Tov? The famous debate of the relationship between the Lachem component and the Lahashem component. Meaning, how much physical pleasure, enjoyment, in a human way, how much of a spiritual or an exclusive spiritual focus on that day? Should you be davening and learning almost exclusively? Or what about the meals and, enjoying a nice walk and other physical pleasures of the day? So generally there's this debate between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehoshua. Right? Rabbi Yehoshua takes the balance, approach, chatzi lashem, chatzi lachem. Right? You should have a certain equilibrium on a Yom Kodesh. And Rabbi Eliezer says, no, people have the right, there are all sorts of people, they're drawn to different things, and there's a range. It could be kula lachem, it could be kula lachem. It's a fascinating argument in its own right, and that's his position. However, he says, there are certain days where this, even Rabbi Eliezer agrees, and certain days when even Rabbi Yehoshua agrees, that you have to pay homage, right, to certain themes. When it comes to Yom Kippur, right, clearly the Lachem part has to be muted in favor of the Lashem part. It's a almost exclusively spiritual kind of a day. You don't eat, v'nisim esnaf shoseichem, it's a day to imitate Malachim, and so on. By the same token, the Gemara says, Chag HaShavuos is a day in which everybody agrees that there has to be some homage, some aspect of Lachem. It's not proper to have kulo lashem on Shavuos. And then the Gemara goes on to tell the story about Rabbi Yosef, who said, after all, if not for the day of Shavuos, right, kama Yosef ika b'shuka, which literally means, I would just be any Joe. I hope nobody, anyways, the point is, he was Rabbi Yosef, and there's nothing wrong with being Joe, but his point was that Chag HaShavuos was a day which was indispensable, right, to the prominence of learning and of Talmid Chachamim, etc. What does the prominence of Talmid Chachamim, Ilav Hai Hau Yoma, Kama Yosef Ika Beshuka, what does that have to do with Lachem? If I had asked anybody in the crowd who didn't have knowledge, which I'm sure is probably, already a stirum in Eubay, but if I could find somebody who didn't, who didn't have this girsa, the yankasa, this information, and I said, what do you think? Shavuos, according to the Gemara, is not a balanced day, right? It's either a kula lachem day or a kula lachem day, right? I'm relatively certain that if people didn't know, they didn't have the background, would choose, or Shavuos, it's about the Matan Torah. That's certainly the way that we celebrate it. So it's a day of Kula Lashem. After all, Klal Yisrael received the Torah. The Rebbeinu Shalom gave the Torah. It was the day of Kabbalah Salmachus Shemayim par excellence. It was a day in which Klal Yisrael were literally exposed to the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was the day in which the world was created for. Right? Bishvil HaTorah Shenikra Reishis. Right? This was the day that the Rebbeinu Shalom's presence was manifest. Gilui Shechina. Literally the greatest day in history, the day for which the world was created. It was an experience that was so awesome, right? Not in so much in the modern use, but in both senses, I guess, full of awe and awesome, that Klal Yisrael had to cry to Moshe Rabbeinu that, Ad Kan, die. They weren't able to continue with the experience. Such was the divine presence, something that was, supernatural and ethereal, in every way. So that's a day of Kula Lachem, of Kama Yosef Ika Beshuka. Very strange. So we have three puzzles when it comes to Shavuos. No calendar date, seeming we have to rely on the Pirushim against the Tzedukim. This is maybe the, if not the, it's one of the top three or four of the famous arguments between the Tzedukim and the Pirushim. Is it just coincidence, or is it symbolic of what Shavuos is in some way, that we're so heavily reliant upon this Mesorah, this idea of the Pirushim rejecting the Tzedukim? That's question number one. Second question, the one that we just mentioned, why is it that the focus of Zman, Matan, Torah, Seinu, which Torah Shebal Peh, the Mesorah, tells us is the essence of the day, it's reflected in Kriyas HaTorah, and in Tefillah, and Birchas HaMazon, and in everything that we do, why is that obscured in seemingly intentionally in the Torah? And thirdly, why is this, according to Chazal, a day of Lachem? I mentioned the Korban Shtei Lachem. The Korban Shtei Lachem is a very unique Korban. We're not going to analyze it right now. But one of its unique features is that there's no Kmitza. You don't take anything of the Korban Shtei Lachem and throw it on the Mizbeach and give it to the Rabbonu Shalom Ki'ilu. Right? The entire Shtei Lachem is consumed. Moreover, Shtei Lachem is unique in another way, as we know. It's a mincha, it's a korban made out of chametz, right? It's probably can't just be a coincidence that we count, you know, from the second day of the holiday in which chametz is prohibited, not only in the mikdash, but anywhere, right? In which, instead of being a staple of our diet, all of a sudden becomes a cursed item for those 7 days. Right, and then we count these days, and we reach Chag HaShavuos, and that's the only time in the Mikdash where you could bring a korban made out of the aforementioned chametz. Okay, so again, this sense that the Shtei Lechem is a korban in which there's no chelek gavoah, there doesn't need to be a chelek gavoah, is in a way consistent with the idea of Kama Yosef Yikah Beshuka, of this being a day in which undeniably there's a lochem component. At least alongside the Lashem component, and we want to understand what that is all about. Okay. So, just to highlight it a little bit further, the fact is that many Mepharshim are bothered why it is that the Torah isn't upfront about this Yom Matan Torah Seinu. Some of them suggest the following answer, or the following type of answer. They suggest that since Torah is central, it's a linchpin of our daily lives, right? It's inconceivable, right, that our daily lives would not be pervaded with this mitzvah. At minimum, miboy patanafshe b'kriyas shmashachres v'arvis, right, v'agisa v'yom v'alayla, at minimum one is obligated to study at least twice a day, in the morning and at night, ideally more so. The fact that it's connected to kriyas shma, again another topic, also symptomatic and symbolic of the idea that studying Torah isn't just a performance of a mitzvah, but it is fundamental to Kabbalah Salmach HaShemayim. So the point is that Torah is a daily obligation and should be part of the fabric of our daily life, very much as you heard in the Hakdamah, you know, it's the Mayim and the Chalav, that aspect of it. But if you emphasize Chag HaShavuos as a celebration of Matan Torah, some of the Mepharshim say, one might have gotten the misimpression that there's some special yichus to this day, and that you're supposed to study more on Shavuos than on any other day. In other words, emphasizing this component of Torah, the giving of the Torah, might distract one from one's daily, from the daily urgency of Talmud Torah. And therefore, the Torah obscured Chag Matan Torah Seinu. That's an answer, quite a popular answer in the Mepharshim. The question is that it begs the question. If that's true, so why is it that the Mesorah, the Torah Shebal Peh, is very forthcoming about all this? You ask any Bar Bei Rav, any child who's, you know, who's gone any kind of training whatsoever, if you ask him what Chag HaShavuos is about, he's less likely to know that the Torah in Torah Shebal Tzav obscured it. He's more likely to know that it's all about Chag Matan Torah Seinu. So what have we accomplished by making the source of this information the Torah Shebal Peh rather than the Torah Shebal Tzav, if in the end the information is out there and the same kind of problem, if indeed this is what we were trying to avoid, exists? I'd like to get back to that as well. Before we do that, So let's take a step back. It's already, I see, I'm not going to be able to touch on the whole topic, but let's see what we can do. We could do a little overtime? Okay. That's a comfort. I appreciate that. I'm at home in a little overtime as well. Let's take a step back and analyze a bigger question. The relationship between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. So first let's establish that it's an axiom in the world of Torah. It's a given. And it's something which is fundamental to our understanding of what Torah is, that there are two components in Torah, that each one is necessary, that there are some differences between them, and yet without one without the other is an incomplete experience and an incomplete commitment. The Torah tells us in the end of Parshas Kukosai, the Torah makes this very, very clear, and in other places as well. The symbol of the way that it's clarified is interesting. Ela Hukim, this is the parsha that we'll be reading this week. Ela Hukim Bamishpatim Bahatoros, Asher Nosan Hashem Beinu Bein Bnei Yisrael Bahar Sinai Biyad Moshe. So the word Toros, these are the Hukim, right, the laws, the Mishpatim, there are different types of laws. Bahatoros and the Toros, plural. Sounds like there are multiple Toros. Asher Nosan Hashem Beinu Bein Bnei Yisrael Bahar Sinai Biyad Moshe. What do you mean multiple Toros? But if you look at the spelling in the Masorah of Sefer Torah, it's Toros without a Vav. So the decree, the way it's read, is Toros plural, and the way that it's written, the Ksiv, is Toras. Rashi, quoting the Sifra, Achas Biksav, Achas Balpeh, Magid Shekulam Nitna L'Moshe B'Sina. This is one of the sources, one of the prime sources, that there are two elements of Torah, one Biksav, one Balpeh, and both of them have their origin in the experience of Matan Torah and Moshe Rabbeinu as the faithful transmitter. But of course, the fact that this spelling, that the Ksiv, is Toras and not Toros, is the Torah's way of signifying in a beautiful way and an ironic way. I mean, there's a kind of a double irony here. In other words, the spelling symbolizes, captures uniquely, the relationship between the plural. Right, it's Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, and the spelling, as opposed to the reading, which itself is Torah Shebichtav, as opposed to Torah Shebaalpeh, highlights that the two are really one. They're meant to work together. That's the beautiful Rashi. Not only that, but we have this as a leitmotif everywhere. The Gemara in Brachos tells us on Daf Hei Amud Aleph that, quoting the pasuk in Mishpatim, Omar Levi Bar Chama, Rab Shimon Lakish, Mai Dechsiv, Ve'etnu Lachas, Luchas Evan, Ba'atorah, Ba'amitzvos, Asher Kasafti, Lahorosam, Apasuk and Mishpatim, I gave you the Luchos, the Torah, the Mitzvah that I wrote, that I taught you. Why so many? Luchos, Elo Aser Sandibros. This is the Torah's way of signifying that there are different strata, different levels of Torah. Luchos, Aser Sandibros. Torah, Mikra. Mitzvah, Mishnah. Mishnah is the Halachos. Asher Kasafti, Nevi'im Uksuvim, a topic in its own right. Laharosam Zat Talmud, that's the reasoning of, or the methodology of Torah, of Torah Shebaalpeh. Melamed Shekulam Nitnu L'Moshe Misina. So you have all these, you're acknowledging different strata, we're not mixing them up, we're not saying that, you know, they might be different, but the differences are unimportant, right? It's just maybe convenience, you can't crowd everything into the text of Torah Shebichtav. The impression is that the Torah itself wanted to convey different levels, different types, different tsuros of Torah. And that, of course, is a very important idea, which we'll get back to in just a couple of minutes. The Gemara Masechet Shabbos tells the story of that famous, Ger or Gerim, as the case may be, who came to Shammai and to Hillel in order to convert. So one of the stories is, Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, Tanu Rabbanan, Maaser B'nochri Echad Shebal Lifnei Shammai, Omer Lo, Kama Toros Yesh Lachem. So the Ger, this fellow, this non-Jew, came to Shammai and Hillel, and he said, how many Toros are there? Maybe, he had heard something of this beginning of the Shir. Omer Lo, Shtayim. So they said to him, two, Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaalpeh, the written Torah and the oral Torah. Amalo, so the Ger, this would-be ger said, "Shebeksav ani mamincha." It's written, it's a text, I can see it, I can touch it, right? I believe in that one. Shebal peh, Torah shebal peh, eini mamincha. I don't believe you about that one. Gaireini amenashe telamdeini Torah shebeksav. Give me, convert me, but I'm going to be a tzeduki type Jew. So gor bovo tzir benezifa. Shammai threw him out. There's no Torah, no such thing as Torah shebeksav without Torah shebal peh. He threw him out. Bolifnei Hillel, the more patient, strategic Hillel. So Hillel said, decided to convert him, but he had a plan. He didn't convert him with this in mind because he was going to accept him with an eviscerated Torah, but rather Gairei, he converted him. Yom HaKama Omalei Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet, right? He started from the beginning. Lamachar Apichle, the next day came in and he said, here are the letters, you know, Dalet Gimel Beis Aleph. He didn't do Atbash, so at least it wasn't so complicated. Amalei v'ayek malo amartli hachi. Yesterday you told me Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet, now you're telling me the opposite. Amalo lav alai didei kasamachta. Aren't you relying on, I'm the Rebbe. Obviously you have to invest a certain measure of trust in the way that I'm teaching you these letters. So if that's the case, dal peh nami smoch alai. This was his way of highlighting, listen, even there's no such thing as a completely independent text, right? You have to decipher a text. Once you have to decipher a text, that's the key to understanding Torah Shebal Peh as well, on deeper level. It's a beautiful insight. Again, you could just read the Gemara and say he wanted to establish the need to rely on the Rebbe. Once you are putting trust in someone, then go all the way with that. I think it's even more than that. I think there's a certain implication here that just as deciphering an explicit text requires some sort of a Mesorah, so too, that's what the Mesorah is in Yahadus. In any case, this is a critical idea. The parsha that we read last week, Parshas Bahar, begins in the same way, right? Vaydabar Hashem al Moshe Bahar Sinai Leimar, the Sifrod zeroes in, Rashi quotes it, it's one of the most famous Rashis of all time. Ma inyan shmita etzal har Sinai. Why do we mention har Sinai in the context of shmita? Right, to teach you ma shmita, just as shmita, we're very small on detail. Right, if you wouldn't know the dinei shmita from the Torah itself, you'd only know them if you put it all together and you had a Mesorah. Kloloseho pratoseho nemar b'Sinai. So all two, this is true for every single mitzvah of the Torah. The Mishnah in Masechet Chagiga discusses the fact that there are certain halachos where they're very, very slimsy, they're hanging by a thread, literally, that's the language of the Mishnah, Tulian Besara, when it comes to Torah Shebeksav. All the information practically is the Besara. And then you have others where there's Ruba Mikra, and you have to figure out, that's another topic, why does the Torah present different things in different ways? I don't think we're going to get to that part of it this evening. The point is, once again, in various ways and different presentations, this idea of the interaction and the necessary interaction of Torah Shebeksav and Torah Shebal Peh is a principle of faith almost. It's a principle certainly of study. The Rambam in his Hakdama to Yad HaChazaka, you have to understand that the Rambam called his work Mishneh Torah. And he meant for it to be, literally the presentation of the Kol Torah Kula, summary and more. In his Hakdama to Yad HaChazaka, or Mishneh Torah, as he called it, the Rambam begins by quoting this Gemara, partly the Gemara in Brachos, V'etnas l'chos aluchos es ha'eben v'hamitzvah, and again, I won't read it now because it's a little late. He says, that means Torah Shebeksav in Perusha. And the whole Hakdama is to explain the Mesorah, Ishmipi, Shmi Moshe Rabbeinu, the indispensability of both of these elements, the written Torah and the oral Torah. These are the two components. Some of Farshim, the Arachayim HaKadosh, and later on Sham Shun Fal Hirsh, I think Rabbeinu Bechai has remez to this in one place, have compared Torah Shebeksav and Torah Shebal Peh to notes of a lecture. Right? You go to a lecture, you're not going to transcribe, some people can, but most people don't transcribe every single word. Right? They hear the lecture and they write the Rosh HaPrakim, or they write in such a way as to jog their memory, right, when they see their notes, they have the experience, and it's meaningful, the few words that they write down fills in the blanks. So too, argue some of the Mefarshim, what we have here is a ksav, but the lecture, right, is Torah Shabbat Pat, and that's the interaction between the two. However, I think that it's important that we go much further than that. The fact that the Chazal insists not only that there are these two Torahs and that each one is significant, but that they describe them as different strata, and that the Psukim themselves, whether it's the Pasuk in Shemos or the Toras dialectic or various other sources, seem to define them and give different designations for them, seems to imply that we're dealing not only with a convenient method of filling in blanks when you can't write exhaustively, you can't have an inexhaustible record, but that there's some other additional and maybe even primary benefit for the Torah to be given and to be transmitted intentionally, in other words, in this form. To have a Torah Shebichtav and a Torah Shebaal Peh. And I think there's much evidence to this. So I'd like to examine this question. Are Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh just a convenience? Are Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh two perspectives on Torah, both of which are indispensable? If so, are there nafgamina? Are there differences? Once there are differences, how do we understand the integration of both of these themes? On the surface, these aren't just descriptive designations of what we have, but they represent different cheftzas and chaloses of Torah itself. After all, the idea of Torah Shebichtav is the idea of a divine text, something which is unique, Dvar Hashem. Right? The problem of religion in general, having a relationship with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, a transcendent creator, is how does finite man enter into any kind of meaningful relationship with the divine? Torah's answer, the halacha's answer, is by means of the special gift of Matan Torah, of Gilui Shechina, the Ravon Shalom revealed himself. He has the capacity to reveal himself to us. He did so historically at that moment of Gilui Shechina, and he does so daily by means of the Torah that we study. And if that's true, so then the method of conveying that Torah becomes a theme in its own right. The Torah Shebichtav is a divine text. It's a text about which we can say Shivim Panim LaTorah, right, the way that it's spelled, even the jots and the tittles, as they say, the ksarim, the crowns on the Torah, are subject to drashos, as the Gemara tells us in Menachos. Rabbi Akiva was able to darshan tremendous things from every jot and tittle of the Torah Shebichtav. All of these are possible when you have a divine text. Shivim Panim LaTorah is possible, having more than being able to read the Torah and have more than one meaning. Kepate Shifotze Tzela, Gemara says in Daf Lama Dalet in Sanhedrin, if you take a hammer and you smash it, on a rock, sparks fly, many sparks fly. That's the way that one should understand Torah Shebichtav and the Shivim Panim LaTorah as well. The Ramban in his Hakdama to Bereishis, to the Torah, says if we knew how to do it, how to manipulate it, we would see that Kol HaTorah Kula, the entire Torah Shebichtav, is Shemosav Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not important that we know how to do it. The idea is more important, namely the concept that the Torah Shebichtav gives us connection, a physical spiritual connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it reflects His will and a connection to Him. On the other hand, what is Torah Shebaal Peh? Torah Shebaal Peh is the human element, effort, painstaking transmission. The Ribbono Shel Olam also entrusted Klal Yisrael, human beings, with all their failings. He entrusted them with this gift, and He made them junior partners in this process. There are no shivim panim, there's no 70 meanings to a human formulation, right? The Torah Shebichtav is never changing. The form, the kri, the ksiv, whatever it is meant to be preserved intact, fully in every way. Torah Shebaal Peh is something that evolves. right? In an evolutionary rather than a revolutionary way, right? By means of the methodology provided by the Torah itself, Torah Hashem Tamima, the Gemara explains what that means is that Lo Bashamayim Hi Ein Navi Rashoi L'Chadish Davar Me'ata. Chachmei Yisrael, with proper study and background in Yiras Shamayim and methodology, Ish Mipi Ish, with a proper Mesorah, are intended to take the Torah and to move it forward, to apply it to new situations, to be creative in their understanding of it. That's not intentional change, but of course it's not the inflexible preserving of the text of the Torah Shebichtav. It's quite the opposite in many respects. The idea of Dvarim Shebichtav, Iyat Torah Shoy LaOmer Malpeh, Dvarim Shebalpeh, Iyat Torah Shoy Liksov, the concept that ideally, and Lemaisa, we don't do all of this Bizmanenu because Veis Lasas Hashem Eperu Torah Secha, but the idea that Torah Shebalpeh should be preserved as a Mesorah and shouldn't be fixed as a text, the idea that Torah Shebichtav, right, should always be read as a text and never read Balpeh, signifies that we're not only dealing with some sort of practical or pragmatic method of conveying the Torah, but we're dealing with two concepts of Torah, a textual, divine concept on the one hand, and a human effort, human transmission, a concept-oriented idea on the other hand. The Balatanya is a very famous comment, which I always like to quote. Balatanya says that if a person does not understand what he's reading, right, and he reads Torah Shebichtav, there's still a kiyum of Talmud Torah, because he's still engaged and touching and has some sort of relationship with Devar Hashem, with the Divine Word. However, if such an individual takes a Gemara Bava Kama, or Zvachim, or Brachos, and he just reads through it and doesn't know what the words mean, right? It might be a very heroic kind of thing. It might be very sincere. We might applaud his effort, but there's no content, and therefore there's no fulfillment in what he's doing. The text, the words of Torah Shebichtav are important. The text is not what's important about Torah Shebichtav. Good formulations intellectually are important. But what's important is the concept and how we understand it and how we apply it properly. In other words, we're dealing with two very different ideas. If there are shivim panim la Torah and Torah Shebichtav, right, there's a din of mishpat echad yalachem for Bali Halacha to try to figure out the uniform psak in a given generation. When it comes to studying Torah, we're interested in the entire range. We're interested in Beis Hillel and in Beis Shammai. They're all Chefzah Shel Torah. But the idea of Halacha, psak Halacha certainly, is to try to reach a consensus in each generation. If that's the case, so we're dealing really with two different ideas. The Gemara in Shabbos Daf Peches and the Tanchuma explains that the Torah was received differently because of these two different dimensions. The Gemara says that when it came to accepting the Torah, it was Kafaleim Har Kigigis. Literally, they had to hold a mountain over the head of Klal Yisrael and threaten them, right? And then they had to agree to accept the Torah. Till Purim came along, that's what Chazal tell us. Right, kimu v'kiblu, kimu mashikiblu kvar, then they voluntarily accepted the Torah. How does that square with the psukim in Mishpatim that say that Klal Yisrael enthusiastically embraced the Torah with Nasa v'nishma? So the Gemara, the Medrash, suggest they embraced Torah Shebichtav. They ran away from the commitment of Torah Shebalpeh. I'm not going to read it because it's a little too late, but both the Gemara in Gittin and the Midrashim have beautiful formulations about how Torah Shebichtav is so appealing, its general concepts, it's inspirational. Torah Shebalpeh reflects the entire scope of Jewish life, which is inspirational and magnificent, but it's quite a commitment. Right? There's no area which is not governed by Torah life. If you only had Torah Shebichtav, that would not be true. You'd have inspirational general ideas, right? It's short on detail, put it that way. The total commitment and everything that it implies about an incredibly ambitious embrace of the Rebbeinu Shalom and of spiritual way of life, that's contingent upon Torah Shebaal Peh. It took Klal Yisrael a little bit longer to embrace that. In other words, we're not talking only, again, about two different systems that provide all the information as a unit. We're talking about two different aspects and two different components of Torah itself. Indeed, possibly there are nafkamina between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. But what's particularly fascinating, and I feel badly I don't have so much time to develop it, is that if you look at various halachic contexts where we discuss the relationship between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh, the status of Torah Shebichsav as opposed to the status of Torah Shebaal Peh, what will emerge will be a little bit surprising. We would expect that we would find, let's say, a simple, straightforward kind of hierarchy. We'll find that either Torah Shebichsav is of greater stature. After all, it's Dvar Hashem, the literal words of God. Their tzura, the form, as well as the content, unchangeable, right? Shivim Panim LaTorah, the divine magic, Shemosav Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Either that's going to emerge on the top level, or maybe Torah Shebaal Peh, with all that painstaking hard work, from Moshe Rabbeinu till our own time. What we do find, in fact, I'll just let the secret out, is mixed evidence. In some halachos, we find Torah Shebichsav seems to have greater stature. And in other halachos, we find that Torah Shebaal Peh is given priority. The Gemara in Masachet Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, discusses the minimum obligation to teach a child, a father to teach a child. The Gemara in Daf Lamed Amud Aleph says, Torah Shebichsav. This is a debate among Rishonim whether that includes the Vim and Ksuvim or only Chamisha Chumshei Torah. That's not for now, though it's actually a little bit important for all of this, but we're going to have to skip quite a bit. But that, of course, implies that the most basic, Meiri explains it this way, the most basic aspect of Torah, the minimum, you want to call it the Mayim and the Chalav, is Torah Shebichsav. The rest, I wouldn't say is exotic, but apparently it's not as indispensable. Moreover, the Gemara says, both in Kiddushin and in Nedarim, Daf Lamed Hei, that I shouldn't publicize this, it's not really true today in many respects, but the only thing that one is obligated to pay for in terms of tuition is Torah Shebichsav. Right? When it comes to Torah Shebaal Peh, Mahu Bechina, Maf Anu Bechina. That might solve the tuition crisis, but that's also for another time. Our schools teach a lot of Torah Shebichsav now, and of course, there's no Yahadus without Torah Shebaal Peh. But ideally, the Rebbeinu Shalom taught Torah Shebaal Peh Bechinam. So again, what would the impression would be if you only have to write a check for Torah Shebichsav and not for Torah Shebaal Peh? Right, that implies something about its priority. On the other hand, right, the Gemara tells us in Chagiga that a person who is adept, and Daf Yudam et Aleph, a person who is adept in Horah and in Torah Shebaal Peh, and then he abandons it, and he immerses himself instead in Torah Shebichsav, such a person is doing a terrible thing. It's almost like he's turning his back on Torah itself. Very strong statement, very difficult to understand. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Chav Ches Amud Aleph says, a piece of advice, min'u b'neichem min ahigayon. And Rashi says that means, don't let your children study only Torah Shebichsav. The Nor Rabbi Yehuda in Tzlach has a different take on that Gemara. He says, it means, they used to have maskilish, kind of teachers, and they only knew Torah Shebichsav. So if you want to get good teachers and ensure that your children are exposed to the full picture and to an education which includes Yiras Shamayim, so minu b'neichem min ahigayon. But that's an interpretation, it's a fascinating interpretation of the Tzlach. What remains more interesting is that Rashi says that Torah Shebichsav without Torah Shebaal Peh, can lead you astray. So we have conflicting evidence. Moreover, we have conflicting evidence in other issues as well. Again, the relationship between Dvarim Shebichsav Iyatar Rashay LaOmer Malpeh and Dvarim Shebaal Peh Iyatar Rashay LaOmer Iyatar Rashay LaKosvam is significant for this discussion. Unfortunately, we don't have time to go into that. The scope of each of them and the comparison between them, according to various Rishonim, leaves us with very different impressions. The Gemara Masechet Megillah, Mishnah Megillah, and the Chafeim Beis and Chavav Med Aleph discusses the principle of Malin Bakodesh Velo Maridin. You can sell X in order to buy Y, but not Y in order to buy X, if Y has a higher level of sanctity than X. Malin Bakodesh Velo Maridin. Again, without going into details, the Mishnah there says that you can't sell a Sefer Torah in order to buy Sfarim. You can sell Sfarim in order to buy a Sefer Torah. The question is, what are Sfarim? And we know what a Sefer Torah mostly is, but what are Sfarim? So Rashi says it refers to Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Other Rishonim have all sorts of different interpretations. Again, I don't have time to go into detail right now, but the Meiri, for example, has a view that Sfarim means Nevi'im, Ksuvim, works of Sfarim of Torah Shebaal Peh. Shulchan Aruch seems to equate Chumashim and Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Chassam Sofer has a tshuva in which he says, in Yoredeya, I think it's Reish Ayin Tes, that when it comes to buying and selling anything other than a Sefer Torah, there's no difference between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebaal Peh. They're identical. After all, da v'da achasi, they're all Torah. It's only a Sefer Torah, right, which has different purpose entirely, Kriya B'tzibor, the reenactment of Matan Torah, where we apply this principle of Malin Bakodesh V'lo Morida. And other Rishonim disagree. And there is very, especially the relationship between Nevi'im and Ksuvim on the one hand, and Sfarim of Torah Shebaal Peh on the other, both in terms of putting one on top of the other, and in terms of selling one when you have limited resources for the other, emerges a major debate. And once again, conflicting evidence emerges about the hierarchy. Which is more important, Torah Shebaal Peh or Torah Shebaal Tzav? Despite the fact that many of the sources, I'm going to skip most of the examples, but most of the sources seem to indicate that Torah Shebaal Tzav gets hierarchy when it comes to buying and selling and placing, and minimal limud, and so on, and schar, paying. It's fascinating, the Gemara says in Gittin unequivocally that the bris of Torah Shebaal Peh is superior to that of Torah Shebaal Tzav. Ein bris kusa ela b'Torah Shebaal Peh. What's going on? But I think it's, again, the introductory words are very appropriate here as well. Torah Shebaal Tzav represents a certain basic minimum. The principles of Torah, the connection to Dvar Hashem, and something which, of course, is indispensable, really, Chafetz Shal Torah, Chafetz Shal Dvar Hashem, something literally which comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam itself. And that's something which is so fundamental that when it comes to minimal education and the question of tuition, when it comes to some of the other issues that we're talking about, having a status as a Dvar Shel Kedusha as a Chafetza, where the object itself is invested with Kedusha, that focuses on the theme of Torah Shebaal Tzav. Torah Shebaal Tzav highlights what is possible, what exists almost in defiance of certainly human logic, a gift from the Ribbono Shel Olam, an aspect of himself. Torah Shebaal Peh represents that larger commitment, taking it one step further, the greater religious ambition of Avodas Hashem, which encompasses all of life. Torah Shebaal Tzav focuses on the source of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Dvar Hashem. Torah Shebaal Peh allows for the ambition where human beings become partners in the process of Torah. That it's Torasso Yege. That idea that Lo B'Shamayim Hi, that Ein Avi Rashay V'Chadish Davar Me'ata, that the Ribbono Shel Olam set up a system in which the Torah Shebaal Tzav can then be amplified by principles, by methodology, so that Chachmei HaMesorah Shebechol Dor V'Dor can then contribute and then take it a step further. Gemara, in famous Gemara of Tanur Shel Achnoi, where the Gemara tells us that the Ribbono Shel Olam was, you know, laughing or, you know, smiling, kivyachol, you know, when he heard the Divrei Torah of the Chachamim, who said Lo B'Shamayim, he said Nitzchuni Banai. He said, "Ah, you really understood. You understand. You capture what the real dialectic of Torah Shebaal Tzav and Torah Shebaal Peh is all about." And if this is true, I think it's also captured in one other source I'll just mention quickly, and then we'll cap things and wrap them up. The Gemara says in Brachos Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, as we know, that every morning one should make a Birchas HaTorah. The Gemara has three examples of Birchas HaTorah. Lasuk b'divrei Torah, or the Sfardim say, Al b'divrei Torah, right? V'harev nos Hashem Elokeinu b'ficha v'yamcha beis Yisrael, v'ni anachnu v'tzatzayinu v'tzatzay amcha Yisrael, lom de Torah l'shma, malam de Torah l'mar Yisrael, and asher bachar banu, v'kolo amim v'nasan lanu es Torah. The Baal HaMor suggests, well, the Gemara itself discusses, what needs a Birchas HaTorah? Again, I'm sorry I have to cut all this out, but one view in the Gemara is only Mikra, only Torah Shebichtav. The other Gemara, view in the Gemara says Mikra and Mishnah. And the third view, Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara. Gemara is the methodology, not just the received information of the Halacha. That itself is fascinating. The idea that you would make a Birchas HaTorah maybe only on one or the other. The Gemara thought maybe only in Torah Shebichtav. That's really Chafetz Shel Torah. When the Gemara said, you make also in Talmud, Rashi jumps in and says, after all, that's Ikar Halimud. So you have again this dialectic. When we thought we'd only make on one, we'd only make on Mikra. Once you're making on all three, and you have the total commitment, then the real ambition lies in building off the Torah Shebichtav and going further, not only to Mishnah, but to Talmud. But let me take it a step further. The Baal HaMor says, these three brachos are keneged Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara. The first one, Mikra, the second, Mishnah, the third, Gemara. So the Raibid, on the spot, asks a question. He says, I don't understand. Atu ein kulam Torah achas? You need three different brachos for three aspects of Torah? It's all Torah. This kind of Torah, that kind of Torah. You need three different brachos. And he says, and if you are already thinking that you need three different brachos, so how unusual is it? You make three brachos and then you do three mitzvahs. That's not what we do. You make a bracha, you do the mitzvah, you make the next bracha, you do the next mitzvah, you make the third bracha and the third mitzvah. You don't make three brachos and then do three mitzvahs. Then the Ravid rejects it. But of course, I think the answer for the Baal HaMor is exactly, of course it's one and it's three. The Baal HaMor was saying, and I'd like to finish with this idea and then get back to the Shavuos for one more minute. He doesn't explain, what he says is very terse. I'm adding significantly, and I hope I'm not taking too much license. The first bracha is Lasuk B'Divrei Torah. In a much broader say, or Alimud Torah, it refers to Chafetz Shel Torah, or broadly speaking, to being involved in Torah. And that's perfect for Mikra, for Torah Shebichtav. Certainly Alimud Torah, referring to Chafetz Shel Torah, and even Lasuk in the more general sense. The second bracha is about the Mesorah, Ish mi piish, transmitted from generation to generation. Tetzainu v'tetzai amcha Yisrael, melamed Torah lamo Yisrael. Not just lilmod, but lalamed. And that refers to Mishnah. The third is asher bachar banu mikolo amim, v'nasan lanu es Torah so. Bechiras Yisrael is reflected in particular by the fact, this unique facet that the Torah has, that Chachmei and Mesorah are also part of the process. That human beings are partners in Torah. Medrash says, why did the Torah split up Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal-Peh? Only for convenience. So Medrash and Shemot says, we wanted to keep it away from people who are not initiated, who are not Jewish, not to suppress the information, but to establish what is it that is unique, the way I interpret it, what is it that's unique about Kedushas Yisrael? It's precisely this point, Morasha Ke'ilas Yaakov, having kind of relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam that he made us partners in Torah itself. Torah Shebaal Peh, by this transmission, it's a closed club of initiates. And it requires enormous work, painstaking transmission and commitment. All of that is a prerequisite for Asher Bachar Banu Mikalo Amim Benasan Lanu as Torah so. So we get back to the question that we began with, which is, Chag HaShavuos, the Chag of Matan Torah Seinu, obscured in the Torah, we don't have a date, we don't have a designation. And not only that, but for some reason Torah Shebaal Peh, which provides all of these things, apparently intentionally, right? So we know it's that because of Torah Shebaal Peh. And all of a sudden it's Kama Yosef Ika Beshuka. The short answer, because I don't have time to elaborate, is, I think, in light of what we said, very simple. The Torah did not want to focus on Shavuos as Chag Matan Torah Seinu in an explicit way, right? Because it wanted that celebration to come through an appreciation precisely of the integration of both of these motifs. And even some of the concerns that the Mefarshim register, which is, like we said, you know, what, only on Chag HaShavuos we celebrate Matan Torah? This is a daily obligation. So then, if that's true, Miman of Shach, so why are we saying Chag Matan Torah Seinu? Why is the Torah Shebaal Peh letting the cat out of the bag? The answer is, if the source of our understanding that this is Chag Matan Torah Seinu, and if the source of our understanding what the proper date is, Mimachros HaShabbos, an affirmation of the Purushim against the Tzedukim, is all about Torah Shebaal Peh, then that reflects something about Torah which one could never misconstrue as being limited to a particular day of the year. If it wasn't for Ibori Paternavshe Kriyashma Shachas Yarvis, if it wasn't for the commitment that we had to Talmud Torah every single day, all parts of our lives, Lasuk B'Divrei Torah, the Harev Noas Divrei Torah, Shabacharbonim Mikolo Amim, then there wouldn't be such an interpretation of Mimachos HaShabbos. We wouldn't know when Matan Torah was. But with all of that, we can say with a great deal of confidence, and we can celebrate not only what the Torah provides, Torah Shebichsav, but the hints of Chag Matan Torah Seinu. And that truly is an expression of Kama Yosef Ika Bishuka Ilav Hahu Yoma. That idea that the Rabbeinu Sholem has not only provided Dvar Hashem, but has given us the opportunity to partner with him to continue to plumb the depths of Torah itself, that is the ultimate expression of a lochem, which is the height of Avodas Hashem. So as we near the end of Sphira, I wish you all upcoming, I guess, meaningful Chag HaShavuos, a true celebration of Torah Shebichsav and of Torah Shebaal Peh together. Thank you. A few more minutes.
Thank you.
If you could give me a copy.